Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. You know, my chat a couple weeks ago with AJ Kirsch of WWE Tough Enough fame, also doing some stuff with the Party Animals, the Savannah Bananas League fame. You know, he was a guy that had been around the WWE for a while and then just moved on. And so I was kind of going through my list of people I jotted down over the years to talk to that also been in similar situations, and one name popped out. I reached out, and we got an interview, and that being Todd Grisham. Yes, Todd Grisham, who worked for WWE from about 2004 to 2011, give or take. And he was there. He's a notable figure during that time, on screen, off screen. And yeah, so Todd and I talked about a ton of stuff because he is still in the public eye, doing boxing commentary for DAZN, D-A-Z-N, of course, DAZN, as well as commentary for Glory Kickboxing. He's also involved with the Undisputed boxing video game. He's really kind of made that his life. So he and I caught up about kind of the state of boxing today among casual fans, as I am. We talked about his time in the UFC, doing commentary for there. What happened? Why did that end? And also we have an extended talk about his time at WWE. He talks about Vince. Talks about whether he would go back to WWE. Does he still keep up with the product? Do you still talk to him from that time? And how that time in his life inspired the rest of his career, which is still going strong now. So, without further ado, let's get to my extended conversation with former WWE broadcaster and current broadcaster for Glory Kickboxing and DAZN, Todd Grisham, coming up right now on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, I was able to track down my guest this week, someone I've had on my list to talk to or reach out to for quite some time, but we're doing it today, and I'm glad we're doing it today for a lot of reasons we'll get into. He is a commentator, of course, for DAZN Boxing, Glory Kickboxing. He's the VP of Global Affairs for Undisputed, a boxing video game you can get on Xbox, PlayStation, and Steam. And, of course, if you're a wrestling fan, you remember his days with the WWE, the one and only Todd Grisham is here. Todd, how are we doing?
Josh, I'm doing great. Nice to finally be on with you. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and I'm excited to handle these questions. Hopefully, they're not too tough.
No, I know. Well, I have a list of hard questions and easy questions, so I guess we'll stick easy. We'll see how it goes, and we'll flow there back and things like that.
Ease me into it.
That's right. That's right. So many places to start. One of the reasons I want to talk to you is I love when people that get out of WWE, they go a couple different directions, or can go a couple different directions, and you've gone in this direction that you've done all these different things. And even before WWE, all these different things. You were, you know, traditional TV broadcaster, right, in like traditional cable or network news and things like that. And then you've done WWE, and then also done some UFC, and then now boxing and kickboxing and everything. It's such a crazy journey, but you've done a lot of things, and I think that's really cool.
Well, I've been very fortunate. For the most part, I haven't been fired, really. So, like, my contracts are coming up, and I end up finding work right before the deal's up or shortly thereafter. So, yeah, I've been everywhere. I've gotten a taste of everything. ESPN for 5 years, hosted SportsCenter. It was a dream come true. I also got to start doing boxing then. And I left ESPN, went to UFC for a year. I mean, that's a dream job in itself. And now I'm getting to call the biggest boxing matches in the world, which if you told me as a kid I'd be doing that, I'd be freaking out. So, I mean, from WrestleManias to 98,000 fans for boxing at Wembley and everything in between, I'm living the dream, as they say, as Dusty Rhodes would put it.
That's right. That's right. Let's start with boxing. So I'm so fascinated because – I am a very casual boxing fan. I used to be a lot bigger fan, like the 90s, you know, the Tuesday Night Fights, HBO era, when we had like five things to watch, right? But it was so addictive getting in that. Yeah. I was one of the kids. I used my money. I gave my dad the money. I said, I want to get the Mike Tyson, Peter McNeely fight on pay-per-view. My very first pay-per-view I ever bought, right? And I was like, oh, that's it? So that's kind of where I come from. So I still kind of stay connected and really interested in some kind of the bigger things. For someone that's kind of been in this for a while, like you have, what is the definition of boxing these days, right? In terms of like everything has changed so much in terms of how people understand. A lot of people, I'm sure, think it's just the high level spectacle fights. Obviously, DAZN has a regular schedule, but it's more, I think, consistent with traditional stuff. Like, again, people may not know yet, but maybe on the rise, kind of a mix of everything. What do you think about kind of this transition, how the sport has gone the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and kind of where it is now?
Well, if you're a hardcore boxing fan, it's never been better. You're getting the big fights you want. You've got DAZN platform, which we air over 200 fight cards a year. I mean, you can find boxing anytime, any place around the world all the time. So in that regard, boxing's never been better if you're just a fiend to watch fights. However, I kind of equate it like people who watch WWE just for maybe WrestleMania and Royal Rumble. You know, they come around for the two big pay-per-views, they like it. They like the showmanship, they like the pageantry of it, but they're not watching Raw and SmackDown every single week. So boxing, they get the big tentpole events people to tune in. Unfortunately, the last big one was Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, which was what it was. But you get people tuning into the big fights, and boxing's having a problem kind of filling in the blanks in between, getting people to stay around, getting people to watch the mid-card fights or show up to the smaller fights. So, you know, depending on your perspective, boxing's either in a really good place or at a place that needs a lot of improvement.
Yeah, it's interesting because so many for years it's been, and since I started was covering, started covering UFC back in like 2005, it's always this boxing is dead, it's not dead, boxing is all this, and it's just this constant need to kind of a debate of how the health of the sport is and things like that. So from your perspective, someone that's worked in it so long, do you think it's in a overall in a healthy spot?
The problem is boxing. It doesn't reward you for the things sometimes it should re reward you for. Like, let's say you're a prospect, you're just starting to get good, but there's a lot of buzz around you and you're 12 and 0. Long-term career success and money-wise, it would be better for you to fight not eight nobodies, but eight fights that you know you're going to win 80% to 20 to fill the next 3 years. You can make a solid paycheck for all these fights. You're not taking the risks that we would like you to see. In the UFC, everything's controlled by Dana White and that company. So they tell the champ, you got to fight the number one guy. You're the number two guy, you got to fight the number three guy. In boxing, it doesn't go that way. They'll say, hey, number two, you should fight number three. And he's like, why would I fight number three, who's from some random country in Asia, Uzbekistan, where I'm going to make 30 grand, where I can fight this guy who's ranked 15th but sells a lot of tickets at twice the money and get a victory. So the problem with boxing, it's so decentralized. There's not enough incentive for these guys to take risks, you know, for a 22-year-old to be fighting for a world title when they say, wait 5 years, make a couple million bucks, then take the risk.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh? Yeah, it's a very fascinating thing to kind of watch from the outside. And I imagine for you know, someone again that's been in it so long, and I've heard a lot of things that you probably can't, talk about or where all the the inside stuff. It must just be fascinating. But to your point earlier, as I was looking at the zone listing, I mean, it's stuff like every single weekend, right?
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It's all around the world. And I think sometimes too, in kind of transitioning, talking about like Glory, for example, kickboxing hasn't like never really kind of truly got hold in the States as it has overseas. And then you watch some of these shows overseas, it's just like, it's a different atmosphere. I think we sometimes, we being in this country, we get so centralized and like, well, it has to be important to us to matter. And you
Right.
look outside the world, especially like even MMA, like some of these crowds are growing, and in boxing and kickboxing, martial arts, and that combat sports is so big outside the world that everyone wants to make it in America, but you kind of look outside, just like they seem to be doing just fine with these crowds.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone wants to come to America. And sometimes, you know, in order, in my opinion, for a sport to really excel in America, it's got to have American stars or names you recognize. So if you bring kickboxing over to the United States, the top 100 kickboxers in the world, pound for pound, I would say 90% or more are from Europe or Asia. So, you know, you bring kickboxing here and you got a guy from the Netherlands fighting a guy from France. I mean, how many tickets are you going to sell? They don't know who the guy is. But pound for pound, kickboxing to me is the most viewer-friendly sport on the planet as far as fighting sports. I mean, it's just for the most part three-minute rounds. You can't hold, you can't grapple. It's stand up, knees, punches, and kicks. And it's just a high knockout ratio. I think it's fantastic, but in order for it to catch over here in the United States, you got to build American stars, and that's expensive, and it's not easy to do because you're telling this 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, go to kickboxing, where in the main event you can make X, or stick with MMA and go the MMA route, and you can be making this amount on sure. Dana White's show. So that's the issue kickboxing is having right now. But I agree with you. You know, in America, we're so sheltered in the fact that if we're not the best at it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, over in Europe, they love rugby. I think rugby's awesome. But, you know, until the United States can challenge for a Rugby World Cup title, it's just not going to be big here.
Yep, good point. When what do you make of everything happening with the Saudification, or just the control?
Yeah.
And what's going on over there? And it's a, you know, Dana White and TKO starting Zuffa Boxing, something he's wanted to do for like better part of a decade. What's your take on kind of what's happening and I guess what's to come? Because so much that we think we know, but so much that's going to happen that we have no idea kind of what's come. What's your take on everything?
Well, to me, there's two ways to look at it. One way is this country has had some serious issues with us in the past, politically and otherwise, that we don't need to get into. We're never going to deal with these people again. They're cut off from our society. Forget them. The other camp is they want us to come now. They've decided that, you know what, we can't shun the West. We can't shun Europe. We're going to bring you in and show you how great our country is and show you how great our people is and show you that we're not what maybe you think we are. And if you listen to these comedians that just went there for the Riyadh Comedy Festival, who were making jokes that 10 years ago, they probably wouldn't have walked out of the country making. They're coming out saying it's greatest. This is the greatest. David Chappelle said, I feel more free here than I do in the United States. So I've been to Saudi Arabia 8 times now. And even from the first time I went 2.5 years ago to now, you can see the way things have changed, the more liberal they've become, the more open the society is becoming. So to me, it's a huge plus. Now, you can argue about whether it's good for sports that they're kind of hogging everything. I mean, they've got billiards now. They got the darts championship. They got huge football players.
Yeah,
Ronaldo plays there.
They got
WWE.
Tom Brady. They got Tom Brady
Tom
in
Brady.
This place. I mean,
yeah. So they're paying, you know, to me, it's like every city in the country or every state in the country has like a chamber of commerce where you're spending money trying to get visitors, trying to spread the good news of your area. And that's what they are doing, just on the highest possible, most expensive scale in the world.
Yeah, good point. I want to ask about how did you transition into boxing initially? I know you said at ESPN, was it with Tuesday Night Fights, or how'd your play-by-play or your indoctrination in that world, how did that begin? When did it begin?
Well, you know, you mentioned the Mike Tyson, Peter McNeely fight was kind of your big moment. I grew up in Alabama. I've told this story a few times before. I grew up in Alabama with a dad who was kind of like a, why would I pay for pay-per-view? I'm already buying cable. One of those guys.
Yeah.
But Evander Holyfield was fighting Mike Tyson. And for some reason that day he was in a good mood or whatever. And he's like, yeah, we'll buy the pay-per-view, the first one ever. So all I'm thinking is, please be a good fight. Please be a good fight. And Evander was from the Atlanta area. That's where we were from. So we're cheering for Evander. We thought he was going to get blitzed in the first round. He got rocked in the first round. I don't remember it, but he came back and won. And man, it was such an emotional bonding experience for me, my brother, and my dad. It was just so cool. And we were screaming, jumping on the couch. And to me, you know, that's one of the few sports that can get you hyped like that. And I'd loved boxing since I was a kid, just watching Tuesday Night Fights. But that was the moment that I really dialed in and loved it, and then started watching more pay-per-views and watching more fights and HBO and all that stuff. And then when I got hired at ESPN, the first thing I did was to go meet with the producer for ESPN's Friday Night Fights and just said, look, I want to be involved any way possible. So they put me as the backup host the first year, and then I became the full-time host, and I was the backup play-by-play guy behind Joe Tessitore, who's now doing WWE. And then eventually I was pretty much the main guy on there. And then after ESPN, UFC had heard me. They knew I liked MMA as well, and then they brought me in. So I've just always enjoyed watching combat sports, whether it's WWE, whether it's boxing, kickboxing, MMA. I'm just that guy that's going to tune it in and hope for some carnage.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, so you were also hosting MMA Live at ESPN, right?
Correct. You
did some fill-in spots there, yeah. And yeah, that's what a – you ever sit there kind of – you're either – when you call your first UFC event or you called your first box event, you ever have a second to just kind of pause and be like, wow. I was a kid watching Holyfield Tyson on my couch, trying to get, hopefully justifying my dad's pay-per-view purchase. And now here I am with the best seat, right? I mean, did you ever have those moments where you kind of sit and be like, wow, I'm not maybe where I want to be, but I'm here where I need to be right now, you know?
I do it all the time, and any moment that I'm in any of these cities or at any events and I have some sort of negative feeling about something or I'm mad about this or frustrated by this, I instantly snap myself out of it and say, your worst day here, your worst day at work, the 12-year-old version of me would think it's the greatest day of his life. And it's true. So that's how I approach everything. And then there's times where, I mean, I called the Anthony Joshua fight against Daniel Dubois at Wembley Stadium. It was the biggest crowd in UK history, 98,000. And I remember he was about to take the walk, and I just kind of took a deep breath in. And all of a sudden, my heart starts speeding. I feel like I'm going to be in the fight. I'm like, don't screw this up. You know, I get those kind of feelings all the time. But I never think I'm bigger than the moment, or I deserve to be there, or it's my right to be doing it. I know it could all end tomorrow.
Think about that. I mean, you're just looking around. It's a WrestleMania-esque crowd, even bigger, actually. And you're sitting there, and it's wild. These productions overseas, they are productions from the entrances, and we're so used to kind of the classic how UFC prefers it, out of the tunnel. Dana White doesn't like a lot of frills. We're boxing in some of these big events. They really they reinvest in it to make it feel like, all right, it has that feel to it. So
Well, that's how I kind of, people ask me the difference between UFC and boxing. I'm like, UFC to me felt like, if we compare it to dancing, UFC's country line dancing, right? You step two to the left, you step two to the right, you kick, you spin, you move. You're doing a dance that they want you to do. You're staying in your parameter. Boxing's freestyle dancing. You don't know who's going to come walking through that curtain. You don't know when the fireworks are going to go off. You don't know how the crowd's going to react. It's a lot more free-flowing and kind of, Wild West, which I like a lot more.
Yeah. So how many different events, UFC events, did you end up calling?
I worked there for a year. I probably called, I'm guessing five or six, but then I
Got it.
hosted UFC Tonight on Fox. I did that, dozens of times. So I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but it's very, I don't know if rigid is the word, but it's like you say this then, you say this then. There's not a lot of time to be yourself except for bell to bell during matches, which was my favorite time.
Did your contract run out, or is it just one of those things where, okay, yeah.
It was a 1 year deal, and it was just kind of like, yeah, well, and I don't want to say it was greener pastures. If they'd offered me like a 5 year deal and pay me really good money, I'm sure I would have stayed. But at the same time, I had this DAZN opportunity to go to, and it was more my style, so to speak.
Because you mentioned the rigidity. That's a it's the kind of thing with some of these groups that they get so big, it's I don't say commoditized, but it's very much like franchise, almost like to your point, it's this is the way we do it. And there's not, I think people kind of forget that broadcasters, at least to me, there's artistry and there's kind of creativity with it too, right? I mean, there's so many of these things where be like, oh, I'm sure you've heard this word. You just go out and do this, call it like this. But there's a way in which you say things, the way you hit the moment, you back off at the right spots and all these type of things that you if you're being told that you have to stay within these guidelines, that's got to be super restrictive for a broadcaster, no matter what you're calling.
Well, I mean, the WWE events, it was like that. Say this word, don't say that word. Do not call them belts, call them titles. My God. It was very much like that. UFC wasn't that bad, but at the same time, afterwards they'd be like, well, you said this about this guy, probably shouldn't have said that, and you described this way, and you're writing all these things ahead of time, the intros and the outros. Whereas boxing, I don't remember a time I've been told what to say. It's just kind of like, do your thing, and if you're good, you're good, and if you're not, we'll get somebody else. So I like that a lot better, just to be me.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite either actually both UFC fights you call that you stand out that you really enjoyed and a boxing fight as well?
Well, for UFC, I was fortunate enough to call the 2017 fight of the year, Michael Johnson versus Justin Gaethje. And it was Justin Gaethje's first ever fight in the UFC. And everyone was hyping up, UFC does, this is going to be the fight of the year. It's a can't miss fight. It's this, this, this. And I was believing it too, but at the same time, I was like, this could just be a dud, But it turned out to be just electric. The crowd was going berserk. You thought Gaethje was done. You thought Johnson was done, back and forth. It was just an insane fight. And it was the fight of the year. So I was very lucky to call that. And I called it with Brian Stann, who,
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
he's so good. And if you listen to a lot of UFC, and this isn't a criticism, if you listen to a lot of UFC broadcasts, especially during the finishes, everyone's screaming and yelling. Right? Ah, Joe Rogan screaming, Daniel Cormier screaming, did you see that? I can't believe it, did John Nannix, and bro, you can't hear anybody. It's just chaos. And with Brian Stan, I told him ahead of time, I was like, look, when they're on the ground, you've done this for 20 years, jiu-jitsu, all this stuff. I ain't going to say anything unless it's about to be a finish. As if there's a finish about to come or striking big moments, let me do my thing. Otherwise, you have carte blanche. I don't have to ask you questions. Jump in. And he bought it. He loved it. You know, because of the WWE, if there's one thing I learned, it was speak in sound bites and remember the finish of the match. You're trying to tell a story that we can take that story you've just told and apply it to promos for the next week on Raw. You know, like, oh my God, CM Punk's career may be over. You know what I mean? That sort of stuff. So Brian Stan laid out, and I felt like a really good call and some really good moments. And it was my favorite fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
As far as boxing, I've called some major, major fights. Fortunately, I got to call the Alexander Usyk Tyson Fury undisputed heavyweight title fight in Riyadh, which was the first time, for those of you who don't watch boxing, the first time in 25 years that all four belts were on the line. And you're like, why is there four belts? Well, there's the IBO, or IBF, the WBA, the WBC, the whatever. But finally, all four were in one fight. That was an incredible fight. But the one that I'll never forget was Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano at Madison Square Garden. The first time a female fight had headlined at MSG for boxing. And it was like a World Cup environment. Half the crowd was Irish. Half the crowd was Puerto Rican. It was a party all night. Everyone was getting sauced. And it was just nonstop noise for 10 rounds. It was an incredible fight.
Yeah, nice. I was just going to ask. One note about Brian Stan. It's such a bummer he left the sport. Good for him because what he's doing outside. Mm-hmm. He was so good on those calls, right? And just so – I remember I used to watch him a lot in like WC fights and so on. But he transitioned over. He just had this this gravitas to him, in that no matter what he said, it's like, I believe him. No matter what, right? Yeah, he just had, and of course, his military background and everything. He just had that thing of like, even if he doesn't know what he's talking about, I completely know what he's. I completely believe him, but I think I know what he's talking about.
And you're not going to challenge him. That's for still looks like he just got out of basic training. I mean, he's just shredded.
Yeah.
But really great person. Had a great time working with him. And yeah, wish him best and wish him luck, whatever he's doing right now. He does a lot of great things.
So speaking of Usyk, have you seen the Smashing Machine movie?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
But I will be seeing it. I saw that it tanked at the box office, unfortunately, which is disappointing for a number of reasons. But have you seen it?
Yes, I saw it. I got access to a screener to it, or I got invited to the screen. I liked it a lot. And it was how MMA movies can be and fight movies can be. Where you can tell where it's just like this action is just, they're really trying to hide it because it's not that good. You know, it's hard to throw a punch, and actors, you can tell when they're like sparring in shows, and it's just like, wow, they've just learned how to do this today. He looked the part, the fighting action, the action was good. My going into it, you know, it was just a lot of talk about Oscar and all the stuff. My hesitation with that was not based on the performances, it was based on the fact that people outside our world that aren't used to fighting and blood and everything that we're like, it's second nature to us.
Yeah.
They're watching this and be like, ugh, you know, like, I don't like people punching, you know, Oscar voters and things like that are used to more soft performances, I guess, and not violent. So that was my one thing is I enjoyed it. It was a quick 2 hours, and I thought it was well worth the time. But yeah, Usyk's in that. But yeah, it's well worth it.
How did Usyk look?
He didn't have any like real speaking lines, you know, which was pretty good. But he was playing the scary Russian. I'm trying to remember what he was from. I can't remember what the pride fighter that ended up being Kerr to begin with. Anyway, he was good. You know, Bader was good. He played Mark Coleman, and all I could see was Ryan Bader because he looked just like Ryan Bader.
Yeah.
I thought your good friend Dwayne Johnson. I thought he did a really good job. So I think it's well worth watching. Of course, Boss Rutan's in it and everything like that. Yeah, it's fun.
You know, it's interesting. People ask me how long I've liked, you know, MMA or boxing or whatever. I think this is the right number. I was at UFC 14.
Wow.
In Birmingham, Alabama, the main event was Mark Coleman versus Maurice Vaughn. I believe his name is kickboxer. So I was there in Birmingham as a fan at UFC 14. That's how old I am, but that's how long I've been supporting the sport. I mean, I was renting the VHS tapes. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
You'd rent them from Blockbuster or whatever, take them home, watch them, UFC 1, UFC 2. And back then it was you got a sumo guy taking on a skinny Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. It was wild and fun and crazy, and I loved it.
Yeah, it's funny because I know you have three kids, three daughters, right?
Yeah.
So I have a daughter as well, and she's going to be 9. I say this all the time. They have no idea what we had to go through to try to find stuff. Like,
Yeah.
like WWE tapes, UFC, the first UFC, and you would have to stumble in the right gas station at the right time. They happen to get just around stuff, and you're like, oh my God, look what they
Yeah.
have. It was a struggle to find things. Now it's like, oh, they put on a phone or YouTube, and then they have the world at their fingertips,
Instantly, no matter what, any fight, any match, any, I mean, it's incredible. But yeah, they don't know the struggle, that's for sure.
That's true. Let's go with some WWE stuff so we before you round the bend. I just talked to someone that was on Tough Enough, the fourth or fifth season of Tough Enough. A guy named AJ Kirsch is doing stuff with the Savannah Bananas League, and they're one of their rivals, the Party Animals. It's this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
He's their in-game like MC, and it's like it's perfect for him. And so I was talking to him because he recently retired from in-ring, and he had done a couple WWE appearances. He did one for AEW. And I was so curious, when he was backstage, should people realize that he 10 or so years ago was in WWE and that he was part of this Tough Enough thing at a time when there wasn't a lot of stuff on TV? And he's just like, ah, some do, some don't. It's kind of an interesting thing. I was going through your run. Your run ended in 2011 in WWE. When you inter do people like, do you think they know you more for what you're doing now? Or do you think, do people still kind of remember what you did that are maybe didn't live through that era, but kind of came in late? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's crazy because I used to host a show called Bottom Line. It was basically a recap highlight show.
Yes.
And in England, they would air it on a loop on Sky Sports 3 from like midnight until 4 in the morning every night. So used to, I got recognized in England 5 to 10 times more than in America. I'd walk down the streets of Manchester, people, oh, Todd, where's Todd? So even now when I go to England, I get people like, you're a legend. I grew up watching you at night when I was like, couldn't go to sleep. And when I was 10 years, 12 years old. So I get recognized all the time over in the UK still. But in America, it's probably 50-50 now. I look a lot different than I did when I was at WWE. So I can tell a lot of people will look at me and be like, where do I know that guy from? Where do I know? And, but yeah, I mean, WWE has such a wide reach, you don't really understand it until you travel the globe. And I get people coming up to me in Saudi Arabia going, Todd Grisham, I grew up watching you.
Oh,
You
no
know,
kidding. No
that
kidding.
was my Saudi accent, by the way. Hopefully, not too offensive.
You should.
But,
I know you reshared a clip recently of you with the giant lapels. I think
oh,
you're interviewing
yes.
The Rock. I mean, maybe you bring some of those back. It just spurs people's memories,
Spurs
you know?
people on, yeah. But I mean, I loved my time at the WWE. It was about 8 years, 7.5, 8 years.
Yeah.
And, just, the amount of stuff that you go through and you learn there, like there's nothing people can throw at me now that I can't handle when I've dealt with Vince McMahon for 8 years in my ear. I'm serious. Nothing. Someone will be like, hey, you're working with this producer tonight. Be careful. He's kind of a, I'm like, okay, sure. All right. And I'm like, come on. I've had Kevin Dunn dropping F bombs in my ear for 3 straight hours, 2 nights a week. I'll be
Right.
fine.
So I was gonna ask, so for people that are new to you as far as your WWE run, you started 2004. Going into that, and you ended 2011, did you have any play-by-play experience before you got on like Heat or anything like that? Or did you go right? I think you went right from TV traditional broadcasting to WWE in studio and then get asked to do commentary. Do I have that right?
Yeah, but I did when I was in college and just right after I graduated college, I would do play-by-play for high school football, high school
Got
basketball. So I'd done that, but at a, a very small scale. But it was interesting when they brought me out for my audition, they told me, you're gonna do some on-camera stuff and then call a match. Well, at the time, I wasn't a WWE guy. I'd watched it as a child, but at that point, I was like 20, I don't know, 27. So I hadn't watched it in, I don't know, 7, 8 years. And they called me on like a Friday and said, can you fly to New York City on Monday? I was like, okay. So I literally printed out every single bio from WWE.com of every wrestler and put it in a binder, right? Took it with me, did a little studying, got there. And then when they had me call the match, it was with either Josh Matthews or Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I did half of it, I don't know. But they said, Val Venus versus Stevie Richards or whatever it was. I was like, okay, so hold on. So I pulled out Val Venus's thing and Stevie Richards' thing. And at least so I had something to talk about because I knew how to tell stories. And even if I didn't know all the moves, Vince didn't like you calling the moves anyway, which I was later learned. So I just kind of called it that way, in between actions, spots, I would say, Val Venus grew up here. He did this or whatever it was. And they loved it because they brought in like, I want to say 4 or 5 guys at the same time for this audition. And I remember the guy, other guys, like when we were waiting to go in, we're like, "This is so stupid. I'm never gonna be taken seriously again. I'm just here for the free trip to New York. I don't know." And I was like, "You crazy? This is an opportunity of a lifetime, man." One of the guys was on a local TV channel in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm like, "You want to stay in Anchorage, bro?" But they didn't take it seriously, and I did. And that's why I got the job.
And you survived working with Vince on the headset
I survived.
and Kevin Dunn and so on and so forth. So
Yeah.
you learned a lot there. You also got to work with Taz, which
Fast.
it is crazy, man, because Taz, like, he is st so he's with AEW now, and he is like such a wrestling survivor. He keeps like he worked for TNA, obviously WWE.
Yeah.
After his in-ring career was long done, like he is just here and here and here. And people still like love him. He has a such a unique kind of personality, but you get to work him for a little bit of time.
He first of all, he's hilarious, right? And he's always in a bad mood. And the reason he's in a bad mood, whatever story tells you, is a funny story. I remember one time he's telling, "Yo, I got coming here. I get off the plane, and this I'm this guy gets up and starts to move my suitcase." And I said, "Excuse me, that's my fucking suitcase." And he goes, "Well, I just need to put mine up here." "Well, you can ask me to fucking move it. You don't touch my fucking shit." And I'm like, "Bro, that's a total like why overreaction. Why wouldn't you? You know, the guy's just moving your suitcase out of it." So no matter what it was traffic. It was, you know, this kid didn't make the baseball. Whatever it was, Taz was always in a bad mood, but it was a hilarious reason. And he would always be ready with a quick one-liner or a funny joke. I mean, I just enjoy being around him all the time.
So you get to work with him in the ECW brand. You get called up to SmackDown. You worked NXT. You did like all kinds of stuff there, pay-per-views, and you got with some work with some of the biggest crossover stars, The Rock and Steve Austin. I mean, so household names to wrestling fans. You get to work with them all in different forms and fashions.
Yeah, I mean Mick Foley, I worked with a few times, I think. I mean, he's one of those guys that can do anything. I mean, this is not going to come out right. He looks like he'd be dumb. He looks like he would not be good on commentary, but he's great on commentary and he's great with promos. He looks like he'd be a terrible wrestler, but he's a great wrestler. I mean, he's just so many guys in the WWE are so talented, like The Miz. I know people think he's annoying, but do you know how talented that guy is? I was there when he had to write the phone number on his arm so he wouldn't forget it for the Diva search. I don't know if you remember this. He was hosting. And he's like, "You know, make sure to call and vote on 1-800-245-26." And the next week, Triple H made fun of him and Shawn Michaels. They wrote numbers on their arms, and Miz is an idiot. And man, he's still doing it, what, 2 decades later? There's just a lot of guys that just aren't just great wrestlers. You know, they're very, very smart people, and to be able to communicate and to entertain to the masses, it's not an easy thing to do.
What's the last WB event that you've been to?
Boy, man, I haven't been in a while. It's weird. When you're there 8 years and you're doing two, sometimes three shows a week after 8 years, I mean, how many is that? Three, a couple thousand? I don't know what it is. I'm not good at math, but you just kind of like, I've seen it, you know. And I'm not one of those guys. If I went, I'd end up probably going backstage. And I just don't like, I'm just not the kind of guy that likes to, I'm not like that. But I'll probably go to a WrestleMania here sooner or later. I can't remember the last show I went to be honest with you.
Do you stay in touch with anyone from that time?
Jonathan the Coachman, one of my best friends. I'll text Matt Stryker every now and then. Josh Matthews, believe it or not, every 6 months we'll get a random text or something. Sean Hel Hurricane Helms, keep in touch. Christian every now and then. You know, just random stuff on Instagram comments. But as far as good friends, Jonathan Coachman.
Interesting. Do you think that your boxing run, kickboxing run, and comedy, does that ever happen without the WWE run and what you learned there? Or were you always kind of destined to get towards it?
Well, when I got into broadcasting, I wanted to do soccer. Like I played soccer in college on scholarship. I loved the game. There was when I was getting into broadcasting, there was no American announcers. They just started the MLS and like half the teams had English announcers. I'm like, this is our league in America. Why are we flying in English guys to do it? So I really wanted to do soccer. And I ended up working simultaneously when I was at WWE. I did the Fox Soccer Channel MLS Game of the Week for 5 years. So I would like to think if somehow WWE didn't come calling, I probably would have gone down that soccer road and, you know, tried to dabble in boxing. But you know, you just some of these things never even cross your mind. Like, did I ever think I'd work at WWE? No. Did I ever think I'd be calling the biggest boxing matches in the world? No. Did I ever think I'd be going to Amsterdam 8 times a year to call kickboxing? No. So who knows what I'd be doing? I might be the voice of the WNBA for all I know, but I'd be doing something in media somewhere.
Do you think you'd ever go back to wrestling if given the opportunity, if it worked out schedule, it was just a moment in time?
Show me the money, right? That's how it goes. I mean, hey, I
Yeah.
used to host a dog show. I've hosted dog shows. I hosted bikini contests. So, when you got three daughters you got to put through college and probably three weddings you got to pay for,
That's
I'm
true.
not opposed to doing anything.
Well, I mean, you still have the slammies you were showing me beforehand. You still get
I'm a
slammed on the
Slammy
wall.
Award winner.
That's
And I was
great.
told after the fact, I can't remember who was mad about it. Cole or somebody was like, they gave it to you guys as a rib. Like they just wanted to piss us off by making you the Slammy Award winner. And I was like, all right, hey, I'll take it. I don't care.
Gotcha. It being you and I are about the same age, or slightly older than I am. You have kids. You have to be
Thanks for
self.
pointing that out.
Well, I mean, look, we're both in our 20s, right? I mean, this is how we
With
do.
gray hair.
That's right. That's right. So, you have to be a dad. You have to be self-deprecating at times. Can't take yourself too seriously, and so on. Did you know? And I say this with love. Did you know that you were a two-time former Wrestling Observer Newsletter Worst Announcer winner? Have you ever heard that before?
I only thought I won it once.
I
So a two-time winner. Wow.
the one and
Yeah,
look
well,
at.
that's the joke is the year before I was voted the worst in the world, and the next year I'm the Slammy Award winner for the best in the world.
Yeah,
You know?
I bring that up. I bring that up because, I mean, look at you now. You've come back from that. You could have just gone and did insurance, sold insurance or cars or something like that, but you stuck with it. Look at you now.
Well, hey, Nicolas Cage has gotten votes for like the worst movie of the year several times, and look at him.
That's
I
true.
don't care about that stuff. You got to realize 40% of the stuff that would come out of my mouth was from Vince McMahon or Kevin Dunn. So if I'm doing a horrible job, it's because they're telling me exactly what they want me to say. Michael Cole will say this as well. Like, Vince would tell you something specific to say, and you had to say it exactly the way he said it. If you didn't, he'd go nuclear on you. Like the divas were smart, sexy, and powerful. He'd say, "Here comes so and so, smart, sexy, and powerful." And I'd be like, "Here comes Jazz. Boy, isn't she just smart and sexy and powerful?" I didn't say and smart and sexy, and I just said smart, sexy, and powerful. Ah! He'd be like, "Okay." So literally, I'm just regurgitating as best I can. I feel like a translator at the, United Nations. Like I've got to get this exactly right. So, he would be in our ear so much and tell me exactly what to say a lot of the time. So, yeah, there was a few times Vince wouldn't be there at certain shows, not often. When he blew out both his quads, he missed a few shows where we really wouldn't get much feedback. And man, it was like, it's like the father who would abuse you goes out of town for 2 weeks. You're like, I'm not getting spanked this week, baby, And then
Yeah.
you could be yourself and have fun. And I really loved calling WWE. It's just, that side of it that really got frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. A couple more questions around the bend. Speaking of Vince, have you? I mean, what a wild few years he's had, and kind of how things have gone, and how things could go, and all stuff. Obviously, you've dealt with them a lot. Did you? You just kind of watching his stuff from afar and just kind of shaking your head like a lot of us. I mean, obviously, you've dealt with them, but I mean, I.
Nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, he just wasn't a great businessman, great promoter, great attention getter, but as far as a person, not a great person at all. I mean, any boss, forget if you didn't know my boss's name was Vince McMahon, and you're like, "Has your boss ever cussed at you?" And I said, I don't know, 100 times a day, every day for the past 8 years. Has he ever threatened you? I mean, of course, that's just, but that's the culture it was it that you were in. So, a lot of people would come to WWE, be it wrestlers, announcers, backstage interviewers, they're there for 3 months and gone. So I used to tell my wife at the time, basically, I know I'm going to get mentally abused for 6 hours this week. Just go take your licks and come back home and enjoy the fruits of your labor. So, it was fun, but, Vince McMahon tried not to make it fun. But to his credit, I mean, he made me better. I mean, he made me be able to roll with the punches. If I was going to go one way on a match, saying something certain or say something a certain way, and he told me to go the other way, I was good at pivoting. I was good at changing storylines. I was good at tossing to the certain products and break. I found that formula where I stayed in my lane. You know what I mean? When you're first there, you're hitting bombs left and right. You're trying to go and be creative about this wrestler, and boom, you didn't say the right thing. And so eventually, you just kind of know what to say and what not to say, and you don't really get to show a lot of your personality that way, and you don't get to create, a lot of memorable moments like JR did. And, some of the things JR said back in the day. Like the steel cage matches with Undertaker and Ric Foley, some great classic lines. mean, I think I would say Vince probably hated a lot of that stuff he said. He fired him multiple times because he sounded like a redneck and sounded stupid and you didn't describe it the right way. But JR had that tenure where he'd been doing it for decades that he got away with a lot of that stuff. And I learned quickly that if I wanted to be here for a long time, it wasn't worth it for me to try and make those memorable moments or fight against what Vince wanted me to do. So I would just, whatever you want me to do, I'd do it.
Final question. How does, in your position, so as you know, social media is probably one of the worst things ever created, right? In a lot of ways. And but people pay attention to it and so on. And as a commentator, no matter what the sport, you're always going to get negative feedback. You know, everyone knows and everyone's kind of been like, I like this or don't like this, they're rooting against my team. All of us have been on this on different sides of it. How does someone in your position get and seek out feedback? Is it from your producers, your current team? Is it with other peers? How do you get better at what you do in the social media and kind of drown out that stuff, but try to find, you know, try how do you get better, I guess?
Well, in regards to social media, if someone makes a valid point, like, hey, Todd, you said he was born in Toronto, he's actually born in Edmonton, or you got this fact wrong, or hey, you said he's lost 8 of his last 9, it's actually 9 and 10. I'll take that feedback all day long. Hey, thanks for pointing out, you know, that stuff I'm cool with. But when it gets personal or, you know, F you're the worst, I mean, you just block that noise out. But, you know, there's certain people in your life that will shoot straight with you. And, you know, I've been doing it so long, I know when it's a bad show. Or I know when I've, you know, screwed up for the most part. So I'm my own worst critic. So there's certain people that, I mean, if someone were to in my orbit call me and say, hey, listen, you're not doing this right, you're not doing this right, I will always listen and take that feedback. If it's some no nuts on social media who's just trying to get a rise out of me, I mean, I don't really pay attention. And anyone who comes to me and says I could do better than you, I'm like, hey, cool, okay. My last DAZN show, I talked for 6.5 straight hours. So I want you next. I've propositioned these people before. Next DAZN show, start your recorder at 4 o'clock and then end it after the main event at 11. Record the whole thing and send it to me and I'll give you some feedback. No one's ever done it because you can't. They'll sound like an idiot. They'll run out of stuff to say. They'll say something wrong. Their voice won't, it'll be horrible. So I know that the vast majority of people who criticize you are just upset that they don't have your job and they think they could do it better when in reality, odds are they probably can't.
It must be so important, I think, for broadcasters or anyone that they're speaking to the public to have people that can give that feedback that you trust, because so many people, I'm sure, like, I'm not going to say this because I'm going to hurt that person's feelings, right? Or, you know, like, and to be able to be like, you know, it's a certain approach, I guess, people take. I guess much like you would if you were hearing someone or something and you gave them a suggestion, there's a certain way to go about it. But I think having a feedback loop that you trust to know it's all out of love and respect and trying to make each other better, that has to be a big, important aspect of making a broadcaster better.
Well, and to be fair, especially when it came to like WWE, it didn't matter what everyone thought. It didn't matter if they thought I sucked or I was good. Only one person mattered, Vince McMahon. I mean, I don't know if you followed this, but everyone busts my balls to this day about my introduction for Christian, who had just come back from being gone from WWE for a couple of years. He was back, so he was about to make his big surprise entrance. Everyone backstage was excited. He's about to make the walk. I'm headed down to the announce table, and Vince McMahon says to me, listen to me. When Christian walks out, just say, it's Christian. That's it. Do you understand me? I'm like, yeah, okay. So that's what I did. It's Christian. And like, you shit on Christian. You didn't give him the respect. Yeah, you ruined it. And I'm like, thinking in my head, it wasn't me. It was that man. And he's very happy with how I did it because he had some vendetta against Christian, whatever it was at the time. He didn't think he looked the part, whatever it was. So, in the big scheme of things, it just kind of goes for life. If your boss thinks you're doing a great job, it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks.
Very true. Good way to end it. Before we end it, what's your schedule coming up this weekend and the rest of this month? You got some busy stuff. What where can people hear you and hear you do your things and you know it, again, practice their own 6 hours.
There you go. Well, this weekend, Boots Ennis is in action in Philadelphia. And I'm sure a lot of people remember Terrence Crawford, who just fought Canelo Alvarez. He left that division, the 154-pound division, to go up and fight Canelo at 168. So a lot of people will believe Boots Ennis is the next superstar at 154 pounds. He takes on Usyma Lima. That's on DAZN October the 11th. And then the next big card for boxing, I'll be going to Saudi Arabia again, wow, November 22nd. It's a really big card. And then a week after that, I'll be going to Amsterdam for kickboxing. So I'm a busy boy.
That's right. Get the passport going. Good stuff.
Got it going.
And you also have the Undisputed boxing game as well, yeah?
Yeah, it's been incredible. What a ride. I was in charge of basically signing fighters to the game, and we've got well over 100 fighters in there, and it's been a big seller. It's done really well, and boxing hadn't had a big major video game in well over a decade, and I think that's one of the reasons boxing's kind of struggled to get young viewers. They tune to UFC. They got a UFC game they can play. They fall in love with the fighters on the video game, and they watch the shows. So hopefully this is helping, you know, the groundswell and the younger fans around the world maybe tune in and watch some of their favorite boxers as well.
Yeah, it is crazy how many wrestlers, younger wrestlers, have got into the game because they started playing video games. They didn't watch anything. They just started playing video games. And I've heard from so many different people and work with like any promotions and stuff. And it's like, really? Like, you didn't watch anything? Like, no, I started playing as Jeff Hardy on Raw versus SmackDown or something. Yeah. And I'm like, that kind of looks cool. So, I mean, who knows? Boxing could, 20 years from now, you'll hear the same thing and be like, yeah, I got to end up playing Undisputed and be like, no shit.
Yeah, and they had to hear my voice. I'm the announcer on the game, too. So
exactly. Well, good stuff. Well, good stuff. I'm glad we're able to make this happen. Tons of stuff to talk about. Best of luck in the future. Congratulations on the success so far. And all success just ahead. Just getting started. Todd Grisham, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Big thanks to Todd for hanging out. And hopefully you enjoyed that conversation there. I do my interviews on Zoom, and I always have the camera on, even if I don't record them. I'm still not at that stage yet for whatever reason. I don't know why. And so he actually showed me the Slammy. He has a kind of a display case down in his basement. He also has this glory kind of what they call a step and repeat, which is a logo, basically a logo board that you see kind of backgrounds with interviews and things like that. So it's kind of cool to kind of get to see the inner sanctum of one Todd Grisham. And yeah, it was very thankful he spent some time with me, and hopefully you got something good out of that interview. And coming up next week on the show, it's already recorded, already in the can, talking with author Guy Evans. Yes, Guy Evans returns for the third time to Josh Nason's Punch Out to talk about Beyond Nitro, and also to talk about his Hulk Hogan Kickstarter he just put out there. Because Guy, is as crazy as he is looking to write not one, not two, but three books about the life and times of the late Hulk Hogan. We talked all about that. And again, Nitro in detail, some very interesting financial information from that book about WCW, some new details about WWE and how much they actually did pay for WCW. It might surprise you. So if you have a chance, if you're hearing this and you're looking for something to read over the weekend, pick up Beyond Nitro on Amazon or Guy Evans Books and read up a little bit ahead of our conversation coming up next week. And with that, I'm going to get out of here. I greatly appreciate the time that you spend with me or any of the great podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate the time. And until next time, which will be with Guy Evans, insert catchphrase here.